Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, home of the Smoothie King Arena. It probably wouldn't sound nearly so amusing if it weren't right next to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. But, you know, the contrast is jarring. And we need a nickname for it, really. I'll see you at the King. Really? Okay. New Orleans, Louisiana, where from the studio position here, we can see the three cranes sitting atop one of the three pumps that went so awry, or actually the pumps on the canals whose walls went so awry in 2005. And you've heard all about, if you've been following the show, the problems with these pumps ever since in the new improved system to protect New Orleans from whatever, built by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Well, now in the investigative online news source called The Lens NOLA at thelensnola.org, Bob Marshall is a respected environmental reporter for many years here in town, tells the story of this new improved system. $14 billion you've paid for it. The Army Corps of Engineers was delighted that you trusted them to build it. The headline kind of says the story, stronger than ever, the flood protection system here in New Orleans, stronger than ever, weaker than it was supposed to be. So now that it's done, or kind of done, it's, you know, with Corps of Engineers projects, they're never really done. They're like screenplays. Some folks are coming forward, and this is no knock on them. They have their own reasons. Some folks are coming forward now to say, well, you know, really, there was a rush to get this thing approved by Congress because the city was trying to come back. And so the criteria for how strong the system should be were kind of changed by Congress because their priority was to make it possible for people here in New Orleans to be able to buy flood insurance. So the upshot was the Corps of Engineers designed and had built a system, quote unquote, more concerned with protecting property than human lives. But let us try. You know, another 14 bill and the lives will be fine. The point also is that Congress had, way back in 1965, when this story started with Hurricane Betsy, and Congress said, never again. Those are the two most mendacious words in the English language, never again. Their criteria were basically a system designed to protect against the maximum probable hurricane in New Orleans. That's not what we got, even now. Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. Now, news of the godly. The Church of England has admitted it is struggling to sell its investment in a payday lender. Yeah, I know it sounds goofy. It's news of the godly. The payday lender is called Wonga, to make it sound friendly, because the church could lose up to $12 million in the process of getting rid of it. The admission comes almost a year after the Archbishop of Canterbury pledged to sell the church's indirect holding in the payday lender, which he said, his words, destroyed lives. The church said it may not be able to sell its stake for some considerable time. Pray for that, won't you? The church last summer promised to compete Wonga out of existence. A day later, it was revealed to have been an investor. The commissioners of the church, who manage about $10 billion worth of church assets, please give, said in its annual report it would like to remove our small investment exposure to Wonga, but they said selling it was proving much harder than anticipated because it's held through an investment in a fund managed by a U.S. venture capital firm, Excel Partners. Sure, why wouldn't a church be doing that? A church commissioner spokesman said the only way to sell Wonga is to sell the whole package. This could not be done on the open market. Buyers would demand a significant discount on the value of the investment. You see, because the church would be a motivated seller, you think? The archbishop said he is very embarrassed about the revelation of the church's investment. The church adheres to a strict ethical investment policy that dictates all investments should be in line with Christian values, this according to The Guardian newspaper. It banned itself from directly investing in payday lenders way back in 2001. Church leaders had not been made aware that the Excel Fund investment included a stake in Wonga. Wonga charges an interest rate of 5,853%. 5,853%. Commissioners said they were reviewing the use of pooled funds in which it has no control over individual investments. However, the commissioners of the Church of England say, quote, "We cannot achieve and do not seek to achieve a perfectly ethical portfolio." They put the words "perfectly ethical" in quotes. "Our approach is not to disengage from the world of investment and business in which we live. We engage with it." Medical research charity The Wellcome Trust, which was also revealed as an investor in the payday lender last July, sold all of its multi-million dollar stake within weeks. They did it. The church fund is banned from investing in arms, tobacco, gambling, pornography, and human cloning. Its biggest corporate holdings were Royal Dutch Shell, HSBC, the bank which was fined by the United States government for money laundering for drug traffickers and terrorists, BP, it can't be perfectly ethical, and, more news from the godly, the United Nations Committee Against Torture. That was from the days when we were supposed to laugh at that. You know, you remember the days when we were torturing? The United Nations Committee Against Torture has criticized the Vatican's handling of the clerical sex abuse scandal, urging the Catholic Church to do more to punish perpetrators, help victims, and place meaningful sanctions on clerics who fail to deal properly with credible allegations. In observations published this week following a two-day hearing, the panel's 10 experts, that's five experts for each day, rejected the Holy See's argument that it only exercises control over the tiny Vatican City thing and cannot be held accountable for the actions of Catholic priests and bishops throughout the world. They're independent contractors. They called on the Holy See, did the United Nations Committee Against Torture, to take effective measures to monitor individuals under its effective control and to stop and sanction conduct that would constitute credible allegations of violations of the UN Convention Against Torture. They're going to get around to waterboarding one of these days. Before the report had even been released, the Vatican issued a statement declaring it had not been found to be in violation of the convention. The convention's American vice chair told The Guardian, though, "Legal scholars will tell you that when we write about a concern and make a recommendation, we are identifying something that is not in conformity with the requirements of the convention. We do not use the word violation. Others do. But it's quite clear." Another UN panel, the Committee on the Rights of the Child, issued a scathing rebuke to the Vatican in February, calling it out not only in its handling of child sex abuse cases, but other stuff that sounded political to the Vatican. Hey, who in this world, who can be perfectly ethical, huh? News of the Godly, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of Hello, Welcome to the Show. Bananeira, não sei, bananeira, sei lá. from just this side of Lake Pontchartrain. You take St. Bernie to St. Tony and you're here. I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. That nasty Iran. They've done it again. This from Agence France-Presse. Iran has, for the first time in 6 years, addressed concerns about the so-called possible military dimensions of its nuclear program, according to a new report by the international nuclear watchdog, the IAEA. Tehran has handed over information related to detonators that can be used for several purposes, but also for a nuclear weapon, under a key November interim nuclear agreement, said the quarterly report from the IAEA. The report showed that Iran is keeping to its commitments under the terms of that interim nuclear deal that diplomats hope will pave the way for a long-term agreement as early as this July. Kelsey Davenport of the Arms Control Association said the IAEA report showed, quote, Tehran is fulfilling its obligations and willing to be more transparent about its nuclear activities, unquote. You've heard this everywhere, right? The report comes a week after the fourth round of talks between Iran and the P5+1 group of nations in Vienna, which ended with no apparent progress towards a comprehensive deal. But wait, there's more. Failure to reach a deal by July 20th could spark a conflict and set the stage for a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani insisted this week that a timely deal by the end of July was, quote, very likely. Contrary to some reports, Iran was not cooperating with the IAEA. The report said that in technical meetings in late April and earlier this week, Tehran had provided, quote, information and explanations, including showing documents to substantiate its stated need and application of explosive bridge wire detonators, a dual-use technology. Iran showed information to the agency that simultaneous firing of this EBW technology was tested for a civilian application, the report said. This is the first time Iran has engaged in a technical exchange with the agency on this or any other of the outstanding issues. The EBW issue is part of seven practical measures Iran agreed with world powers under a November interim deal. All have been implemented, the IAEA said in this report, indicating that Iran was sticking with its commitments. And there's more. Under the November deal, Iran also agreed to convert and dilute its entire stockpile of medium-enriched uranium, making it more difficult to quickly produce weapons-grade material. Of the stockpile, 38 kilograms are still awaiting conversion, down from 160 in February, the report said. Iran has until July 20th to complete this work. So about three-quarters of the enriched uranium has been converted. The enrichment program otherwise remains frozen, with no uranium enriched to levels above 5%, as per the agreement. Those damn Iranians, they're agreeing. And, also outside the bubble, Russian television, the pro-Russia broadcaster Russia Today, that is to say, regaled viewers with a mocked-up family tree linking the royal family of Britain to Nazis. Really? The row that refuses to die descended into playground idiom, says The Guardian, when a Kremlin-funded news channel hit back at Prince Charles's alleged likening of Vladimir Putin to Adolf Hitler. Charles had said earlier this week in a private conversation that was leaked somehow, now you know how Donald Sterling feels, Chuck, that Russia's annexation of Crimea was reminiscent of what Hitler did in Europe pre-World War II. Said Russia Today, quote, if anyone knows real Nazis, it's the royal family, unquote. Then they showed Charles's great uncle, the Duke of Windsor, and wife Wallis Simpson, photographed visiting Hitler at his retreat in 1937. Hitler never retreated, after abdicating as Edward VIII. Simpson, said the RT's senior political correspondent, quote, hung out with Hitler. That must have been a fun hang anyway, you know? That must have just been a swinging affair. But wait, there's more. Because this is Russia being nasty and truthful. the Duke of Edinburgh. His chest weighted with medals. His sister Sophie, said the anchor on RT, was married to an SS officer. They could have added, but didn't, that he named his eldest son Karl Adolf in Hitler's honor. Member of the royal family. Then Charles's very own son, Prince Harry, of course, pictured in Nazi costume at a costume party, which he apologized for. This attack did come 3 days after Charles precipitated the diplomatic row on tour in Canada when he spoke to a Jewish survivor of the Second World War. It was a private conversation. At least a deputy prime minister defended the prince's right to espouse his views in public, in private, sorry, like Donald Sterling. Appalled at the Hitler comparison, Moscow's anger has been palpable. You do know the royal family has almost for a century tried to put distance between itself and its German roots. They're the Battenbergs or the Mountbattens, but they changed the family name to Windsor around the time of the First World War. Isn't that convenient? It's timing. News from outside the bubble. Or the bubble. But the bubble. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast on this Memorial Day weekend. You know, there was a great deal of controversy about the alleged and apparent waiting times for veterans to get medical attention at the Veterans Administration, or now Veterans Affairs, hospitals. And that's being discussed all over the Sunday Yak shows, which have transmogrified very, very quickly from their original intent, which was to have some newsmaker grilled by a panel of supposedly impartial, or at least impartial-seeming, reporters, hence the name Meet the Press. All the shows have now turned into, like, in case you missed it this week, here's the news this Sunday, with about 2 minutes devoted to every topic. So it's gone. They've gone. The idea that, oh, at least once a week, somebody will sit for an interview and there'll be about 15 minutes where they'll yak their head off and try to dodge the questions. And maybe somebody will get a question in. No, not anymore. Anyway, they've all been talking about the VA mess. But the Army says more than three-fourths of 17 to 24-year-olds today are not eligible to join the military because they aren't fit enough or don't meet other basic requirements, such as being able to read or riv properly. That's got some of the nation's highest-ranking retired military officers advocating a radical way to improve national security, improve the lives of children. This is reported by CNBC. It's not just a school problem. It's not just a Department of Education problem. It's a national security issue, and it needs to be prioritized that way, says retired Major General D. Allen Youngman. Take his wife, please. He's one of hundreds of former military officers who have gotten involved in Mission Readiness, a nonprofit organization whose Too Fat to Fight reports attack junk food in schools. Its members also lobby lawmakers. Tom?
They lobby lawmakers.
That's right. For improved school lunches.
Lunches.
And for more widely available pre-K education. These military officials say such interventions are necessary to increase the pool of people who want to serve in the military and would be able to do so, so they can sometime patronize the VA. Current military officials agree the nation's obesity epidemic has created a serious problem for the next generation of soldiers. They say the military is also starting to address the issue with efforts such as improving nutrition for current service members. Hey, get mess kits made from Michelle's garden. And by trying to help military families promote healthy eating and exercise habits with their children. If we really need the service now and of the future to be more physically fit and healthy, we certainly find that we can engage as a country how to address strategies of healthy living, said Public Health Service Captain Kimberly Ellenberg. She also is Program Manager for Population Health at the Defense Health Agency. Who knew we had one of those? The Defense Health Agency, ladies and gentlemen. We proudly have one of those. The effort comes amid proposals to reduce the number of U.S. troops significantly, of course, following our time in Iraq and Afghanistan. But while we're reducing the number, the total poundage stays. No, it doesn't. There's nothing about war that is becoming fundamentally less physically demanding for at least half the people on the battlefield, says Michael O'Hanlon of the Brookings Institution. He says that's because the military may not be able to avoid messy on-the-ground conflicts in countries where there are massive humanitarian violations or other lawlessness. But Ellenberg says troops need to be in shape even if they're not in ground combat. Nurses must be able to carry a large load of equipment to help the wounded. Service members on ships need to be able to nimbly climb vertical ladders from deck to deck. And personnel on submarines need to be fit enough to stay alert for hours on end. Now, that's the most painful position to be in on end. It all, ladies and gentlemen, sounds like this.
Well, when it comes down to truculence, the truck don't stop here. I'll cuss out the bad guys at the drop of a beer. I'll talk up America till dawn's early light. Too bad that I'm too fat to fight. I joined up with the army on some kind of dare, but traveling on my stomach, it made people stare. Couldn't fit in my bunk, my camo was too tight. Turns out I was too fat to fight. That's right. Too fat to fight, and ain't it a shame? 'Cause war is really America's game. Got bellicose brains, but our varicose veins mirror all too fat to fight. We're all too fat to fight. That's right. Now the burgers and the fries, the cokes and ice cream, I thought I was eating the American dream. But when my boots disappeared clean out of my sight, I could see I was too fat to fight. Now shooting and parachuting clean out of a plane, it's not just a job, it's a terrible strain. The few and the proud will carry our might. Rest of us are too fat to fight. That's right. Too fat to fight, and it does seem a waste, but building up nations just ain't to our taste. Got bellicose brains, but our varicose veins mean we're all too fat to fight. The bad guys are fast, they're smart, and they're light. God made us too fat to fight. Now one of these days, my son will enlist. I'll be hiding my tears, by his mom he'll be kissed. He'll waddle on that drill field and be home by night. Like his dad, he'll be too fat to fight. Too fat to fight, and ain't it a shame? 'Cause war is really America's game. We got bellicose brains, but our varicose veins mean we're all too fat to fight. Yes, we're all too fat to fight.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr.
Well, I bet you didn't see this coming. Brazil will not make good on its commitment to clean up Rio de Janeiro's sewage-filled Guanabara Bay by the 2016 Olympic Games. No. State environmental officials acknowledged as much in a letter obtained this week by the Associated Press. In the letter addressed to Sports Minister Aldo Rebelo, Rio's State Environment Secretary, Carlos Portinho asks for more funding for deep pollution efforts, but acknowledges that at current investment rates, it will take more than a decade to significantly reduce the levels of pollution in the bay, where the Olympic sailing events will be held, don't you know? In Brazil's Olympic bid, officials promised the city's waterways would be cleaned up, quote, setting a new standard of water quality preservation for the next generations. But an AP analysis last year of a decade's worth of government data on Guanabara and other waterways showed the sewage pollution indicators consistently spiked far above acceptable limits, even under Brazilian laws that are far more lenient on pollution than the United States or Europe. Because it's down there. Pollution goes down there, right? Because of gravity? Authorities pledged to cut by 80% the flow of pollution into the bay by the 2016 Games through the expansion of the sewage network and the construction of river treatment units, or RTUs, built at the mouths of rivers flowing into the bay. The facilities would filter out much of the sewage and trash. But little progress has been made on either front, and with just over 2 years to go until the Olympics. Nearly 70% of the sewage in the metropolitan area of 12 million continues to flow untreated, along with thousands of tons of garbage daily into area rivers, the bay, and even Rio's famed beaches. With Rio in the international spotlight ahead of next month's World Cup, to be held all over Brazil, the stench of raw sewage that greets those arriving at the international airport and the stream of images of the garbage-strewn waters of the once pristine bay have become a major embarrassment for authorities. So reports ABC News. Associations representing Olympic athletes have also begun to sound the alarm bells, raising questions about possible health hazards for athletes. In the letter, Portinho requested the sports ministry give Rio state officials $70 million to help build two new RTUs. He acknowledged even if the funds were released and the treatment units built, they, along with two other existing units, would represent a reduction of over 50% of the pollution flowing into the bay, well below the promised reduction. Portinho added that given the urgency of the matter and its fundamental role in the event, it is of great importance that the funds be released. A spokesman for Rio's environmental agency confirmed the authenticity of a letter. He wrote, even if authorities were to tackle the big problem of a lack of basic sanitation by expanding the sewage network, it would prove too little, too late for the Olympic Games. Hey, Bob Costas, you want to go swimming on your day off? Tudo bem. The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day.
Nothing make them holler like the almighty dollar. The jungle hawks are at it again. If he's rich, truly nice, give him the cut price. Let them overcharge the poor some more. You can buy a cheap thrill, it could be a few bits. Even get yourself killed fast. It could fool your heart, make you think you're smart. Tear friends apart, too bad. Sing about Viva la money, Viva la money, honey. Viva la money, Viva la money, Viva la money.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Well, the parade of NBA owners apologizing has just gotten a little longer. Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban has apologized for a portion of an interview in which he spoke of Los Angeles Clipper owner Donald Sterling's racist comments and his, Cuban's, own prejudices. Specifically, Cuban apologized to the family of Trayvon Martin, the teenager who was wearing a hoodie when he was shot to death in Florida in 2012. Cuban said in a string of tweets that he, quote, should have used different examples, unquote, as he sought to illustrate prejudice that he says everyone has. In his remarks to Inc. magazine, Cuban had said, I know I'm prejudiced and I know I'm bigoted in a lot of different ways. If I see a black kid in a hoodie on my side of the street, I'll move to the other side of the street. If I see a white guy with shaved head and tattoos, I'll move back to the other side of the street. Unquote. Late Thursday, he tweeted, in hindsight, I should have used different examples. I didn't consider the Trayvon Martin family, and I apologize to them for that. Beyond apologizing to the Martin family, I stand by the words and substance of the interview. Unquote, Mark Cuban. Wouldn't you love to see Donald Sterling and Spike Lee just mano a mano in a room? No doors, no windows? Dinesh D'Souza told a federal judge on Tuesday that he deeply regretted violating a federal campaign finance law, and that he knew what he did had been wrong during a hearing in which the conservative author, and now filmmaker, pleaded guilty to making more than $10,000 of contributions in the names of others. I knew that making a campaign contribution in the name of another was wrong and something the law forbids, D'Souza told the judge. I deeply regret my conduct. Are you pleading guilty to this crime because you're in fact guilty of it? The judge asked. Yes, Your Honor, D'Souza said. Prosecutors accused D'Souza of using straw donors to contribute $20,000 to the campaign of a Republican attorney, an old friend of his, who was running against the Democratic senator in New York. D'Souza was also charged with one count of causing false statements. That's expected to be dismissed. Prior to entering his guilty plea, Souza had repeatedly maintained his innocence, and his lawyer had argued that Souza was being targeted for his history of criticizing the president. Not anymore. Because it came sentencing time. For reasons unknown, a Oxford, England branch of the supermarket chain Sainsbury embellished its DVD and Blu-ray stand for Steve McQueen's film, 12 Years a Slave, with a mannequin wearing a similar outfit to that of the protagonist, Solomon Northup. Looking defiantly summer-ready, the mannequin wears a loose-fitting beige shirt with holes in it and black trousers with a twig in the front pocket. A spokesperson for Sainsbury said, we can only apologize. It's been taken down from the store and clearly should never have gone up in the first place. The slave look. New York University issued an apology this week to any workers on its newly completed Abu Dhabi campus who were not treated in line with the standards we set after the New York Times reported widespread abuses among a labor force that numbered about 6,000 at its peak. Workers, according to the article, were arrested, beaten, and deported to their home countries after striking over pay. Recruitment fees of approximately a year's wages were all but required, and laborers had to work overtime, sometimes 7 days a week, to earn the base pay they were promised. Not one of the dozens of workers interviewed had his own passport. The conditions are common to projects in the United Arab Emirates, where poor South Asian immigrants make up most of the workforce. And NYU, announcing its project, had issued a statement of labor values, saying those working on its project would be treated better. But now they apologize for not. The website of People's Daily, the official publication of the ruling Communist Party in China, issued an apology on Tuesday for an error in its reporting on illegally recycled cooking oil. The website's reporters had been investigating gutter oil, as it's known, in and around Beijing. On Sunday, several People's Daily reporters were assaulted while visiting a factory outside Beijing. Last week, the paper reported it had traced gutter oil that had been shipped from a factory in that province to a plant in Tianjin. It linked the plant to the Chinese branch of a Singapore-based agribusiness group. They've now posted an apology. I don't think any of us cared about that. The priest Gerardo Joannon, at the center of the scandal in Chile, Chile's Child Protection Agency, working with detectives to determine how many children were involved in a network within the Catholic Church. Oh, no, not again. Which put babies up for adoption in the 1970s and 80s without their parents' knowledge, telling the biological mothers that their child had died. The Stolen Children Network was uncovered by a Center for Investigative Journalism in Chile, which published a series of articles last month. The story said in some cases the mothers were persuaded that giving up their children was the best chance for them, but in others they were told the baby was stillborn or had died soon after birth. The church folks have now apologized. Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice acknowledged Friday he had failed miserably and apologized for the actions that led to his arrest on assault charges, in which he allegedly struck fiancée Janae Palmer. And a Florida prosecutor apologized Thursday for a social media post that included him referring to drug addicts as crack hoes and suggesting that Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor's appointment was due to affirmative action. Nice people doing nice things. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. So is Hillary Clinton running for president? It appears that a lot of folks think she is, viz. Republican strategist, consultant, hack, Karl Rove, last week floating the notion on Fox News and then defending it last Sunday on the Fox News Yak Show, that she had suffered a traumatic brain injury. It is well known she had a concussion and, according to her husband, spent 6 months in recovery. Karl Rove sort of upped the ante on that incident by calling it a traumatic brain injury and saying that that might be an issue, her health, that is, as well as her age, lady's 66, if she were to run for president. She's just on a book tour right now promoting her, I guess, memoir-ish book, campaign book, Hard Choices. And, of course, she's still under pressure. The House is opening an investigation, has named a new committee to investigate the death of four Americans at the U.S. CIA installation in Benghazi, Libya, before Libya went bluey. And belatedly, after many weeks of saying, no, never, no, will not, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democratic leader of the House, this week announced Democrats would join that committee investigating Benghazi once again. And Mother Jones magazine this week published a list of some of the organizations that Hillary Clinton is speaking to now, speaking engagements worth $200,000 a pop. They include KKR, the private equity firm, which was covered in a long story in the Wall Street Journal about the way that KKR apparently overcharges its investors fees that they shouldn't. The Carlyle Group, another private equity firm, two appearances before Goldman Sachs, a speaking engagement for the Producers Guild of America, not the actors or the writers, just the producers, and the National Auto Dealers Association, the guys who don't want Teslas to be sold directly to the public. Oh, yes, it all sounds like another episode of Clinton Something next here on the show.
Clinton Something, the not running yet years.
We worked Pelosi on this morning and night.
Mm-hmm. Maybe should have tried the afternoons in addition.
Madam Secretary, she was just adamant that having senior Democrats on the House Benghazi investigation would at least give us a window into what they're doing, which would make our rapid response, you know,
more rapid.
That's right.
Well, then maybe she shouldn't have taken the we're not having anything to do with those crazies position in the first place.
She's convinced that taking that position made her ultimate decision to throw in with the crazies seem more...
not crazy. And I thought the Senate cafeteria was the only reason to be happy I didn't run for the House.
Okay.
Well, it is what it is.
What? Oh, nothing, Madam Secretary. It's just... I'm just remembering that from my memoirs. It's just so wise.
Thanks. Just remember, make sure your deal includes all formats, including those not yet contemplated, in this and all other universes. That last line was inserted by my lawyer after the cosmologists started having second thoughts about string theory.
Got it. Oh, and some good news.
Karl Rove had a traumatic brain injury?
Not quite. But our latest polling shows that it's staying rock steady at 60, the percentage of likely voters who think Benghazi is where the Palestinians live.
Well, that's something to build on. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I think the president is looking for a few minutes with you.
Well, I'm up against it to finish this speech, but sure.
Forward.
Forward. Of course, your company has come in for criticism. If you assume the phrase vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity is intended to be critical. But...
hey, Madam Secretary, writing the next book already? What's this one? Easy choices? Harder choices? Hard choices over easy? How you doing, Toots?
Fine, Bill. Yeah. Actually, I'm finishing up a speech I have to deliver to the Goldman Sachs retreat tomorrow.
You have to? Mm-hmm. Wow, that's too bad. Especially since they're not paying you $200,000 to help compensate for the inconvenience.
Oh, they are?
Uh-huh. Well, Hill, that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about.
Goldman Sachs? I can introduce you to...
I've met him. Mm. Hell, I've spoken to him back in the old days before they were retreating. It's not just them, Toots. I looked at the list of your speaking engagements.
So the new glasses are working for you?
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that.
So the new hearing aid isn't...
Babe, you know me. I'm an old sax player. I don't have perfect pitch, but I sure can recognize a clam when I hear one, or when I play one.
What's a clam? This better not be...
It's a wrong note. Hmm. Hun, this whole deal of flying around and getting $250,000 a pop to speak to the big boys and girls clubs, it just doesn't ring right.
You know, I promised way back when that I'd stop laughing at you. But this is tempting me big time. You're not the same Bill Clinton that would take $100,000 to speak at any foundation except the Paula Jones Defense Fund, are you?
Toots, one big difference... that was after I left office, when I was pauperized by the legal fees and everybody knew it was either speaking engagements or pulling a Tony Blair and getting consulting gigs with brutal Central Asian dictatorships. Speaking engagements were the obvious choice.
Because?
Fewer long-haul flights. Mm. But you've written books, you've joined my foundation, everybody knows you're not living in a cardboard box on 7th Avenue. And it's the wrong side of the presidency. You should be...
I should be what? Doing like Nixon before he ran and going around the country raising money for other Democrats?
Not the worst idea in the world.
He did that so they'd support him at the convention. In case you haven't followed the last half century of American history, conventions are just telethons for well people.
Well, I don't know.
Am I supposed to just sit at home and let the Republicans Benghazi and brain damage me to death?
No. How's your head, by the way?
It's fine. How's yours?
Which one?
Okay, look, Bill, I have a trusted staff whom I can afford to keep on payroll thanks to these speeches you find so distasteful. They don't see anything wrong with the strategy.
The strategy that keeps them getting paid? I wouldn't think so. Look, Toots, everything in politics is timing. Right now, you got all this State Department gravitas draped over you like Miss Liberty's robe. Why would you want to look like you're disrobing and trying to rent out the Lincoln bedroom before you're even the landlord?
Bill, I'm getting a headache from all this.
I'm sorry. Maybe Karl Rove was right.
I'm already taking heavy incoming fire. I don't need you to come in here throwing your little grenades.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank goodness the Benghazi thing hasn't gotten to you. Look, hon, if you need money, the foundation can, you know, honor you or something. Talk to Chell about it.
It's not the money, Mr. President. We just think it's important to send an early message to our friends in the corporate community that, unlike certain Democrats currently occupying the Oval Office, I'm not anti-business.
Who do you think's paying for his damn library? Not the Teamsters.
I know, but they like to think he's anti-business because as hard as he tries to go against it, he still gives off that urban thing.
No, I've seen him play golf. All right, babe. You and your well-paid team know best.
Thanks. Hmm? Now, before you go, do me a favor.
Sure.
You're good at this. Give me a sunny-sounding euphemism for vampire squid.
Youthful angst and middle-aged drive for power. Together they add up to Clinton something. The not running yet years.
Hush, 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 it would do you well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, safe, too safe to meet.
Addy the Atom is having some spa treatment today, but here's the news. A wrong instruction issued by the manager of the Fuk No. 1 nuclear plant after an emergency cooling system failed possibly led to the early meltdown at the No. 1 reactor, according to documents. Before his death from cancer last year, Masao Yoshida told a government committee he felt regret for making a wrong presumption in handling the critical situation in the wake of the earthquake and tsunami. According to a copy of his testimony recently released by the Asahi Shimbun, a worker at the plant central control room, noticed that the cooling system, an isolation condenser attached to the No. 1 reactor, was losing its functions on the evening of March 11, 2011. Suspecting the condenser was losing cooling water, the worker requested that Yoshida, in the emergency response center, take steps to refill the condenser with water. Yoshida was unaware of how the mechanism worked because it was the first time an isolation condenser was operated at the plant in 20 years. It serves as a last-ditch measure to cool the reactor when ordinary pumps cannot. To coin a phrase, dough, the company that operates Fuk started dumping groundwater into the Pacific Ocean this Wednesday, and the facility used to treat the most contaminated water shut down this week after repeated breakdowns and leaks. The manager of the advanced liquid processing system used to treat water with the most dangerous radionuclide contamination called its latest closure embarrassing. The system has never operated at full capacity since its installation in 2012. Consistency. We admire that. And the Air Force missile wing that failed an inspection last year flunked because its security team was unable to quickly recapture a stolen nuclear arm. When it was first reported last August that the 341st missile wing at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana had failed its safety and security review, the Air Force's Global Strike Command said that tactical-level errors unrelated to command and control of nuclear arms resulted in the unsatisfactory rating. But this week, the Associated Press revealed it was the inability of security personnel to retrieve within a certain time frame a captured nuclear weapon during the simulation of a belligerent seizure of a launch facility that caused the entire missile wing to fail the review. Feel safer now? News of the Atom. Clean, cheap, safe. Too safe to care. Our friend the Atom.
We do not have time for this kind of silliness. We got better stuff to do.
All right. Sorry, Mr. President. We'll go away. That concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet. At two different locations, live and archive, whenever you want it. HarryShearer.com and KCSN.org. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast from WWNO.org, Sideshow Network, SoundCloud, and iTunes. and be just like the Air Force not flunking its test to retrieve a stolen nuclear weapon. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much, uh-huh. If you're in Atlanta, Judith Owen with Lee Sklar, the legendary Lee Sklar, tonight, Sunday night at Smith's, Tuesday night in Memphis, and Thursday night at Cafe Istanbul here in New Orleans. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile in Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead and to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO in New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program and a playlist of the music heard here on, you'll find them at harryshearer.com, along with Cars I Talk t-shirts. Is he kidding? No, he's not. And I tweet to you, join the more than 99,000 followers at The Harry Shearer on Twitter. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO, New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.